As we begin our thoughts this evening, I'd like to ask you to turn with me to Luke chapter 5 and look at a few verses here that speak about Jesus and his special call of various individuals to discipleship. Luke chapter 5, go with me down to verse 10 as we begin. It says, "And so also James and John, sons of Zebedee, who were partners with Simon, and Jesus said to Simon, 'Do not fear, from now on you will be catching men.' And when they had brought their boats to land, they left everything and followed him." Skip down to the 27th verse of this chapter. "And after that he went out and noticed a tax gatherer named Levi sitting in the tax office. And he said to him, 'Follow me.' And he left everything behind and rose and began to follow him." This was not the first time that Jesus had met these disciples, these men who would later be chosen by Christ as his apostles. And yet, Jesus was giving them a special call to be his disciples, in the sense that they would travel with him, they would listen to his teaching on a full-time basis, and therefore he called them away from their secular jobs in order to be part of his disciple band. Peter and Andrew and James and John, the sons of Zebedee, they were fishermen. And Jesus called them away from their duties as fishermen to join him to be his special disciples. Levi, or Matthew, was a tax gatherer or tax collector. And Jesus asked him to leave everything and to come and follow him and be one of his band of disciples. These verses speak about the fact that there was something more important than the secular jobs that these men had. This morning we talked about the importance of work, and we especially looked at passages that talk about the responsibility of us as human beings to work. That is something which God has made us to do, that's in our very nature. And therefore, it is all part of our makeup to be people who work to provide for our own selves. And yet, these are passages that help us to put our secular jobs in perspective. Because as important as the secular jobs of these men were, they were not as important as the spiritual duty of following Jesus and being one of his disciples. And so, though there was nothing wrong with their secular jobs, Jesus called these men in particular to leave those secular jobs and to become one of his disciples. Now, these examples here don't necessitate that each one of us leave totally our secular jobs that we might follow Jesus. He does not have some earthly ministry today in that sense. He's not reigning on the earth, but rather he's in heaven. And the fact of the matter is that Jesus calls upon us as Christians to continue in our secular work and yet to engage in those secular jobs as Christians. But what these passages do illustrate, I believe, is the fact that we dare not elevate our secular work above our spiritual pursuits. As important and as good as it is for us to provide for ourselves physically by means of secular work, we never must have the idea that that secular work must come before the Lord. There are spiritual matters, spiritual endeavors that are more important than any of the secular work that we might pursue. I want us to understand that God calls upon us as his people to be Christians, and that Christianity should touch every aspect of our lives. And of course, that one aspect is our secular jobs. We need to make sure that as we select a career for ourselves, as we select a means of providing for ourselves in this earthly life, that we choose a job that is going to be conducive to our pursuit of Christianity. And that's the first point I'd like us to make as we try to think seriously about our responsibility before God in regard to secular work. We need to make sure that the jobs that we choose are things that will coincide with our pursuit of Christianity. In Matthew chapter 5 and verse 30, Jesus here was giving various teachings regarding how we use our body and the things that we use our body for, making sure that we use our body in such a way that we bring glory to God and not dishonor to ourselves. In Matthew chapter 5 and verse 30, Jesus says this, "And if your right hand makes you stumble, cut it off and throw it from you. For it is better for you that one of the parts of your body perish than for your whole body to be cast into hell." Now, I don't believe Jesus here is speaking literally. He's speaking somewhat hyperbolically here when he says, if your hand offends you, cut it off. The fact of the matter is, it's not our hands, literally, that offend us and get us into trouble. They don't work independent of our mind. And yet what Jesus does here in this context is to speak about various parts of our body which signify various pursuits in life. And I think when he speaks about the hands, he's especially talking about the things that we do with our hands in regard to work and those kinds of things. In Ecclesiastes, he talks there about whatever your hand finds to do, then do it diligently with all your might. Well, Jesus here says, if our hand offends us, then we need to cut it off, so to speak. In other words, he's saying that there are some things that we might choose to engage in and work that we might choose to engage in with our hands that would really be a stumbling block to us. It would be detrimental to us spiritually. And Jesus says it is much better for us to make that sacrifice and perhaps even sacrifice something that we might like or that we might want, and it might impede us to a certain extent in this earthly life, and yet, spiritually, it's going to be much better off. He says, keeping with his figure, it's better to go through life without a hand, maimed, than to enter with our whole body into hell. As important as physical work is, we need to understand that spiritual pursuits are more important. And I would just say to you that some jobs that some people pursue are jobs that really are not conducive to their Christianity. Now, I think the most obvious example of that would be some job which inherently is immoral or would cause a person to be engaging in things which are inherently wrong and sinful. And I think all of us can recognize that that kind of job is not the kind of job that a Christian should be engaging in. It's not the kind of job anyone should be engaging in, but especially someone who has said to the Lord, I'm going to serve you, and I'm going to put you first in my life. If we're engaging in some kind of work which is morally wrong or sinful, then obviously we need to cut that off from us and separate ourselves from that kind of endeavor. And yet I would also suggest for your consideration that there are some jobs a person might pursue that maybe are not inherently sinful, and yet they might not be conducive to a person's spirituality and spiritual growth. And sometimes people who are Christians give no thought to that at all. And they act like that their secular job is something totally separate and apart from their spiritual pursuits. We talked about that in this morning's lesson. That's not the way that we as God's people can conceive of it. We must recognize that God put us upon this earth to provide for ourselves, and yet never did God intend for our providing for ourselves to in some way impede us in our spiritual pursuit. That obviously is the most important thing, and we need to make sure our priorities are in their proper place. I know of an individual who's very close to me, who was a great singer, in fact, was a tremendous singer of the classical works and opera, and in fact, even got his degree in musical performance. Very talented in that, was seeking a career in that kind of pursuit, in the performing arts. And yet, as he began to think about that more and more, after he'd gotten his degree, he had come in association with many of the people in that particular line of work, the performing arts and the opera and all that kind of thing. And he began to see that the kind of people that engage in that lifestyle are people who are absolutely, in fact, most of the time, absolutely devoid of any kind of pursuit of righteousness and godliness. In fact, you might not think that that's true. I'll tell you what, if you want me to recommend a few books to you, I can recommend one or two that would speak about opera. Now, we tend to think that, well, opera, that's kind of a highbrow kind of thing, you know. I mean, surely you're not going to have just a bunch of reprobate people involved in that kind of activity. I'll tell you what, you read a few books I can recommend to you written by opera people describing that particular way of life. And there's just rank immorality in that kind of thing. I had an individual talk with me recently about whether or not it was good
for a young Christian that he had been sort of a mentor of, whether or not it was good for that person to go into an acting career. And he was worried about that kind of lifestyle and the people that he would be involved in if he became successful in the acting career. And I want to say to you that people need at times to think about the jobs that they pursue as to whether or not they are conducive to their Christianity. I was telling you about this individual who had been pursuing the opera career and that classical music career. What he finally did was say, I'm not going to pursue that. Not that it's inherently wrong to sing. Not that any of those things in the arts and with the theater were inherently wrong, but he realized it would put me in such a situation where the temptations would bombard me and it would tend to take me away from the Lord. And he said, I don't want to put myself in that kind of situation. And I tell you what, that's the way Christian people who really have their priorities straight, that's the way they think. Now, that doesn't mean that I can get up here and I can just spell out to you, well, you know, this is the kind of job that you should refrain from, and this one's fine, you know. I'm not going to do that. There are obviously matters of judgment that are involved in all of this. And it depends upon a person's individual circumstance. And yet Jesus is trying to get us to see that as we use our bodies to engage in those things of work to provide for ourselves, we dare not engage in things that would be a detriment to ourselves spiritually and get us into circumstances and situations that we really should not be in. We need to think about those kinds of things. And many of God's people, I'm sorry to say, pursue careers and never give any thought at all to whether or not it's in the best interest of their own Christianity. Let me move on and talk about some other things. I think we need to have a well-balanced view about work. I want us to turn back to the wisdom literature this evening. Look especially with me at Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verses 5 and 6. This morning we looked at what the wisdom literature had to say about the importance of being skilled in work and giving our best effort in our secular jobs, not being lazy. And yet look at what the writer of Ecclesiastes says here in Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verses 5 and 6. He says, the fool folds his hands and consumes his own flesh. Meaning there, the sluggard kind of fool. He doesn't do any work. He just folds his hands, never provides for himself, and in so doing, he consumes his own flesh. His inactivity is what harms him personally. And so that might be a proverb that would speak against being a sluggard or a lazy person. But look at the next proverb, verse 6. One handful of rest is better than two fists full of labor and striving after wind. One handful of rest is better than two fists full of labor and striving after wind. He's talking here about the kind of person who uses his earthly life to pursue work and work and getting more money. He's a workaholic kind of person. Both of his hands are clinging on to labor. And he thinks that's going to be the best thing for him, that that's what earthly life is all about. And that person's not balanced. Solomon says, no, one handful of rest. And that, the idea is one handful of rest, one handful of labor, is better than two fists full of labor. We've got to be well balanced in it. And what that says is that we need to make sure that we have a balanced attitude about our work and about our careers. And sometimes people can get so consumed with that kind of pursuit, the pursuit of earthly wealth and advancing their career and all that kind of thing, and the good feeling that they get from doing their jobs, they can be so consumed with that, that really they aren't well balanced in it. They don't act wisely in that regard. We need a well-balanced approach to this concept. I think, for instance, of Ephesians 6 and verse 4, where there the Apostle Paul says to fathers, the fathers are not to provoke their children to anger, but to bring them up in the nurture and discipline of the Lord. Some dads aren't able to bring their kids up in the nurture and discipline of the Lord because their kids never see them, because they're never at home. They're out there working. They've got two fists full of labor, and the kids rarely see them. And to the extent that they are there, the father's not able to really bring up his children in the nurture and discipline of the Lord. That's a fault. Now, that's just the only way to say that. And here we need to recognize the responsibility that we have as fathers, not just to provide for our own in a material way, but also to provide for our own in a spiritual sense. And again, as important as secular work is, we can't make it the top priority so that it even infringes upon our spiritual duties. That's a grave error. Recall, Jesus even taught his disciples the spiritual pursuit is more important even than the physical work. Or think with me at what the Apostle Paul says in Titus chapter 2 to the women. Titus 2 verses 4 and 5. He says this. He's talking here to the older women who teach the younger. He says that the older women may encourage the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be sensible, pure, workers at home, kind, being subject to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be dishonored. The Bible does not teach that it is wrong for a woman to ever work outside of the home. This passage here isn't meaning that. When it says workers at home, it's not teaching that a woman could never be a worker outside of the home. Yet it does teach, the Bible does reinforce the idea that the primary domain of the woman is at home. Tending that household, the children, being the ruler. In fact, that's even the word that is used, the despot or the ruler of the home, of the household, in that domestic aspect. That's the responsibility of the wife. That's her main focus. In Proverbs chapter 31, we there read of the excellent wife as the wise man speaks to the young man who's in pursuit of a good woman to marry. And in that last chapter of Proverbs, he speaks about that excellent wife, the one who would be a great choice for a wife. And you see many wonderful things about this woman. Verse 13, she looks for wool and flax and works with her hands in delight. She is like merchant ships. She brings her food from afar. She rises also while it is still night and gives food to her household and portions to her maidens. She considers a field and buys it. From her earnings, she plants a vineyard. She girds herself with strength and makes her arms strong. She senses that her gain is good. Her lamp does not go out at night. She stretches out her hands to the distaff, and her hands grasp the spindle. She extends her hands to the poor, and she stretches out her hands to the needy. She is not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household are clothed with scarlet. She makes coverings for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. Her husband is known in the gates. When he sits among the elders of the land, she makes linen garments and sells them and supplies belts to the tradesmen. Strength and dignity are her clothing, and she smiles at the future. This is a marvelous example of what Paul was telling Titus about women who are to be workers at home. That is, their primary focus is their family. And they're providing for their children, the clothing of their children, seeing that food is there on the table for their children. And in so doing, they strengthen the hands of their own husband. And they assist him as he is out providing for his family and doing the things that he needs to be doing. This passage does not teach us that it's wrong for a woman to be working outside the home. In fact, it talks about how she considers a field and buys it. And she plants a vineyard with the money. She's engaging in that kind of business. And yet, you see that everything she does, even that purchasing a field and selling it, even that is for the ultimate benefit of her own household. And never is her attention diverted from that. Now, we live in a society that teaches women that they just can't feel good about themselves unless they're out there seeking a career like a man. And the idea that your primary focus as a wife and mother should be your household and your domestic duties, that's something which is anathema to our 20th century American society. But I'm going to tell you something. That's not anathema as far as the Bible is concerned. That's what the Bible teaches. And that's not just something which is a cultural thing. which is not intended for every generation. Obviously, in these passages, there are some cultural aspects to it, and yet the underlying principles that Paul talks about and the Bible talks about, the relationship between the husband and the wife and their respective roles and duties, those fundamental principles go back to the very beginning. And we need to understand that, and we need to not be ashamed of that in any way. We need to recognize that the very way that God made male and female necessarily makes the woman the child bearer. And there are a whole manner of responsibilities that tie in with that, that she's the one who bears the children. And that isn't a shameful thing. That's what elevates her and gives her honor. And Proverbs 31 teaches that that husband, that wise husband, will indeed rise up, and her children and the children along with him will rise up and honor that wife and mother because she is that excellent wife, that worthy woman. She recognizes her responsibilities and she tends to them. And so we need to work hard at ridding ourselves of this idea that's so prevalent in our society that a woman needs to have some career out there if she's going to feel good about herself as a woman. I want to tell you what. If women, just like men, as we talked about it this morning, if women would seek to fulfill the function that God has given them, that's where their self-worth lies. And that is not something that we should veer away from. Now, in saying that, I'm again not suggesting that it's wrong for a woman to maybe have some kind of job outside of the home. I'm not saying that. The Bible doesn't teach that. But here is the point. I want to drill home. Women, if somehow your pursuit of your career out there causes you to not fulfill the responsibilities you have to your children and your home, then that's a sin. That's wrong. That is just as wrong as if a man doesn't provide for his own household because he's a sluggard. He's not fulfilling his function that God gave to him. And in the same way, when a woman neglects her household for the pursuit of her career, I want to tell you what, something is terribly, terribly wrong with that thinking. And that thinking just permeates our society. It's a cancer that just permeates our society. I may have told you this story before, but our next door neighbors, they hadn't been living by us very long, but before she became pregnant, and we were talking one day with them about their plans once she had the baby, and she just offered this quite candidly. We weren't really, you know, trying to elicit this kind of comment, but she just said this. She said, well, just as soon as I can after I have the baby, I'm going to put the baby in daycare and go back to my career. And we were kind of talking in the context, as I recall, about how difficult it is to provide for our families in this day and time and all that. And she made it clear that she wasn't going back to work because, well, our society is a two-income society and there was no way that he alone could provide enough for them. It wasn't that. She quite candidly said, well, you know, I thought about just staying home with the child, and I could do that, but frankly, there's just too many things that we want right now. And so she went back to work so that they could put up, just a short time later, their satellite dish and put in a swimming pool and get that extra car. So she put her kids in daycare so they could have all those things. She was quite honest about it. She said, there's just too many things materially that we want right now. Now, I'm going to tell you what, that illustrates exactly what I'm talking about. Work is not wrong. Work is something that is good, but we have to have a proper, balanced attitude about it. And when our secular job takes us away from some responsibility that God has given to us, then that becomes wrong. That's a sin. And we need to think long and hard about that kind of thing. I recognize that we do live in a society where increasingly our society is a two-income society. And I understand there are some occasions where a wife has to go out and has to work, and in order to provide materially for the children, they have to be put in some kind of babysitting care or daycare. I'm not saying that's inherently wrong, but what's the motive behind it? That needs to be the question we always ask ourselves. And we dare not deceive ourselves about that motive, and we dare not deceive ourselves about whether or not the kids are being harmed by the fact that we're not really pursuing the roles as God designed them. We need to give thought to that. I want us to also think in the time that we have left about the way that we behave ourselves on the job. I want us to look at a couple of passages that speak to us about what we might call business ethics. You ever heard that expression today? People talk about business ethics. It's almost like, well, here's ordinary ethics over here, and then there's business ethics. There's some difference. Certain things are legitimate. They're justified in business that otherwise would not be considered proper. I want you to look with me at a few passages here. Look first of all at Proverbs chapter 20 and verse 23. There are just a lot of proverbs that talk about shady business dealings, cheating people on the job force. Proverbs 20, verse 23 says this, "Differing weights are an abomination to the Lord, and a false scale is not good." In other words, talk about individual, ancient culture especially, but you know, we still, the same thing would apply in our modern culture. The idea where you say that you're selling this amount of goods here, or this amount of wheat, or this amount of corn, or whatever it is, and you've got the scale there, and you're balancing it out here, but you've got a scale that's off, and you know it's off. And the reason why it's off is because you want that guy to pay that price for that amount of goods, and yet not really have to give up that amount of goods. Just a little bit off there, so you come out ahead. And he says here, that's deception. In fact, he says, that's an abomination to the Lord. That's exactly the same word the Bible uses to express the Lord's disgust with adultery and homosexuality. Those are spoken of as abominations before the Lord. And this kind of dishonest business practice, that's exactly the same attitude the Lord has about it. Or look, if you will, at the book of Amos, chapter 8, verses 5 and 6. It's very interesting that when you look at many of the prophets, as they speak about what was going on in their societies, so often the sin of the Israelite society has to do with improper business dealings, where they take advantage of other people dishonestly. In Amos chapter 8, verses 5 and 6, he says this. Well, let's start with verse 4. He says, "Hear this, you who trample the needy and do away with the humble of the land, saying, 'When will the new moon be over, so that we may buy grain, and the Sabbath, that we may open the wheat market to make the bushel smaller and the shekel bigger, and to cheat with dishonest scales, so as to buy the helpless for money and the needy for a pair of sandals, and that we may sell the refuse of the wheat.'" Now make sure you get all the points that he's making here, because these verses are really packed with meaning here. First of all, he's talking about dishonest business tactics. He's talking about dishonest scales. He's talking about cheating the other person, not giving them what they are honestly paying for, so you can get a bigger profit. But look at also how this is expressed. He says, these people in ancient Israel, they're anxious for the time when they can get back to their secular work and engage in this kind of shady business practice. And they say, "When will the new moon be over, so that we may buy grain, and the Sabbath, that we may open the wheat market?" The new moon was that festival at the first of every month. It was that holy day. And the Sabbath day, of course, was a day of rest. and they weren't supposed to work on that day. And yet the attitude of these people is, oh, I sure can't wait until these holy days to the Lord where we honor the Lord are over so we can get back to cheating people. Now, they wouldn't say it like that, but that's exactly what it was. So here are people that are religious people. We might say, just to put it in our modern day circumstance, oh, I can't wait until Sunday's over. You know, we've sang about how much we love Jesus and taking the Lord's Supper and we prayed and all that kind of stuff. Can't wait till it's over. Get back to work on Monday so I can give somebody the wrong price, make them pay too much. Or I know that this product is defective, but I'm going to go ahead and just sell anyway, put it in the middle of all the others so he won't notice it. And that way I can get my bigger profit. So we praise God on Sunday and Monday morning go back to dishonest business practice. Cheating the other person. Not being fair with it. And look also that he talks here about especially those who were harmed by this kind of shady business practice being those in Israel who were in need. Those who were the humble in the land. In other words, people who couldn't do anything about it. You ever known somebody who just, you knew he was cheating you? And he knew he was cheating you. But since he knew you couldn't do a thing about it, you couldn't prove it. He didn't care. He was going to cheat you anyway. And that's exactly what was going on in ancient Israel. And that's what Amos decries. And these were the people of God. These were religious people. And yet they justified in their own minds. And can't you just imagine those back in Amos's day saying, but Amos, it's just good business. Isn't that what people say? I'm just a good businessman. And yet they use their shady business tactics in order to get ahead at the expense of the other person. The person who's helpless, who can't defend themselves, who can't prove them an error. We have a lot of people in our day who engage in these kind of shady business dealings with the attitude, well, if I get taken to court, I might win. They might not be able to prove it. Or, at the very worst, we can settle out of court. See, that's the thinking. People of God dare not think that way. People of God are honest. And they recognize that every other person that they're dealing with in business is a child of God, made in His image, just like they are. And they're going to treat everybody fairly and honestly and respectfully. There's a passage, I think, that would be good for us to keep in mind. It's not directly talking about business dealings. It's talking about slaves and masters. And yet I think the principle that it expresses would certainly apply. Look at Ephesians chapter 6 and go down to verse 5. Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 5. Here the Apostle Paul says this, slaves, be obedient to those who are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, in the sincerity of your heart as to Christ, not by way of eye service as men pleasers, but of slaves of Christ doing the will of God from the heart. With good will render service as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that whatever good thing each one does, this he will receive back from the Lord, whether slave or free. In other words, what he says to the slave here, of course being owned by his master, has to work for his master, he says, make sure that you always recognize God is the one who's looking over you, and what you do in your diligent work and honest work and fair work for your master, it's always recognizing that really God is the one who oversees you. You're doing it not just to please men, not just so the boss man won't get on you, but you're doing it because the Lord is watching and you want to make sure He's pleased with the kind of work that you're doing. I think that certainly gives us a lesson in regard to what we've just been talking about, but it also, I think, gives us a lesson in regard to our own responsibility toward our employers. We oftentimes emphasize the fact that we need to not do anything as an employee that would violate our conscience, and that's certainly true. And if there would be an occasion where an employer would be calling upon us to lie about a product or service, or to cheat or be dishonest in some way, as a Christian, we'll have to just say, no, sir, I cannot do that. And if that means that we get fired, we get fired. Again, that's what being a Christian means, that I put the Lord first. I'm seeking to please Him. But you know, we also need to keep in mind the principle that Paul talks about in Romans 12 and verse 18, where he says, and so far as it depends upon us, let us be at peace with all men. I've seen some Christians, in my opinion, abuse the idea that we won't do anything to violate our conscience, and they almost use it as an excuse to very happily say no to their employer. Almost like they're just happy that now there's a chance where they can stand up to their boss and say, I'm not going to do that, and just, you know, not have to really be a diligent worker. I've seen Christians who I think abuse that principle. It's the same thing as how some people in the name of Christianity abuse the passages that talk about our responsibility towards civil government. We all know that we're not to obey civil government when it would put us in direct conflict with what God commands us. We have to obey God rather than men, and that's certainly true. And yet there are some people who abuse that principle and justify civil disobedience, as it's referred to. And it's not that the government is somehow forcing them to commit some sin, but they think that because there are things the government does that they don't like, they're then justified in going ahead and doing all manner of sinful things, and it's okay. Civil disobedience is fine. Now that's an abuse of that principle, to obey God and not obey men. When obeying men will put you in conflict with the Word of God. And it's the same thing that sometimes people can do if they're not careful when it comes to their responsibility toward their employer. It has been my experience and others that I have talked with that an employer who sees that the employee who is a Christian is not using their Christianity as a means of getting out of work, not using their Christianity as an excuse for laziness or just bucking what the boss wants to do, but instead honestly and sincerely believes in those Christian principles and because of that cannot in good conscience engage in some of those actions, and yet that boss sees this person in every other circumstance is a diligent, hard worker. It's been my experience and the experience of others I've talked with say that non-Christian boss is impressed with that employee. And chances are, your Christianity won't be an impediment to you. I've talked to people who've gone into their prospective bosses and they told them up front, now I cannot work on Sunday because that's going to take me away from worship services. Now, if you don't want to hire me, fine. But I'm telling you up front, I can't work then. I put the Lord first. But I'll tell you what, sir, every day I'm at that job, I'll guarantee you that I'll be the best employee out here. And they proved that. And employers see that. And they recognize there's something special about that person. And again, I take us back to those passages that in the New Testament talk about slaves and their responsibility to their masters. Why is it that there's so many passages in Paul's writings and even in Peter's writings that talk about a slave being diligent in his responsibility to his master? I'll tell you why. Because the buzzword around the ancient Roman world was that those Christians who said they had liberty, that they took that as license for them to just throw off human institutions and human responsibility. And the New Testament writers say, no, that isn't true. And you show them that's not true. And if you have to suffer for conscience' sake, okay. But you make sure that you are diligent and you show them that you're being a Christian doesn't now then justify in your mind being a lousy employee or a lousy slave, but instead just the opposite. you're the best kind of worker you can be. Because you're not just being a men pleaser. You're trying to please the Lord. You're doing the right thing. You're giving a fair day's work for a fair day's pay. And that's what you're doing. And I tell you what, employers, most employers, they see that and they respect that. And then if there does come a time when for conscience sake you can't do it, they know that they can trust you, that you're not doing this to be some lazy employee and to get out of work, but you're doing it for honest conscience sake. And most will respect you. And most won't allow that to impede your job. Now some may. It's no guarantee. But I tell you what, I think if we would keep in mind the principles that the Bible is laying down, it would help us immensely. So far as it depends upon us, be at peace with all men. Give an honest day's work. Work hard, even for your non-Christian boss. And I'll tell you what, I think what we'll find is that things will generally go a lot better for us. Work is something which is good, which God commanded us to do, to provide for ourselves. It gives us a sense of self-worth and good self-esteem. And when we fulfill our responsibilities in a good way, then we can feel good about ourselves and know the Lord is pleased with us. But always we must remember to keep the Lord and His spiritual principles first. If there's anyone tonight who needs to respond to the gospel, we urge you to come. I'll get them to stand.